Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is a great Wednesday here in the bluegrass of Central Kentucky. We're broadcasting to you live for episode number 342. And joining me tonight as the other co-host, the wonderful, the beautiful, the vivacious, Holly Phillippe. Holly, I see you, at least on my board.
Hello, hello, hello.
There you are.
I'm here.
There you are. There's Holly. Yay.
I'm here.
The star of the Star Chamber, Holly Phillippe. The chat room is open and working, and so come on in. Metalbeck Harrison was the first in tonight, and I see the Amy McCorkle is also in. Holly's in there. So, yeah, we're getting underway in the chat room. Of course, check out Metalbeck's book blog, Book Beck Adventures. And, of course, Amy always has film and book projects going on with her constantly busy world and all kinds of great stuff that she is up to. But we are excited and ready to go and have some news to share with you and all kinds of stuff. And then we have an absolutely fantastic guest tonight. It's really going to get into some serious topics, but it should be a really good conversation with a lot of good insights and a lot of good things for people to take away from the show tonight. So definitely looking forward to speaking with our guest. And Holly and I have been working away, and oh wow, last week we had a lot of guest announcements. So I guess Holly, I should just go ahead and just give a quick overview of everybody, huh?
yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, we've had several spotlighted guests. One was USA Today best-selling award-winning author Chaz T. Bolin, absolutely fantastic, fantastic author. And then we also announced Ren Melian as a spotlighted guest. She is an award-winning author, editor, publisher, game designer, and artist. And she is just, you look up Renaissance Woman in the dictionary, and there she is. I mean, she's the publisher of Craft Paper Muse Magazine and the owner of Dragonfly Press. Of course, we also announced the one, the only, the amazing Sandy Lender, award-winning author, multi-genre author, and also the editor of a construction industry magazine. How cool is that? But she's won both literary awards and tech writing awards. Not many can claim that. That's pretty awesome. And Sandy was announced as a spotlighted guest. And then also that spotlighted guest is Hallie Bridgman, who is just amazing. She has sold almost 1 million books in her career. She's also a USA Today bestselling and award-winning author. Just an absolutely amazing public speaker who's going to be a great addition to panels and workshops. So, yeah, we have all those spotlighted guests announced, Chazzy Bolin, Ren Melian, Sandy Lender, and Hallie Bridgman. So that's four in all. And if that's not enough for you, we announced a couple waves of panelists. We announced eight, as a matter of fact, of Marilyn Barr, Kathy L. Brown, S. Cinders, and Carol Preflatish, and S.B. Pierce, and Janie Franz, Rob D. Smith, and Michael Houchin. And group, I mean, we've got editors, we've got authors, and editors, and I mean, just an amazing spectrum of writers there as far as the genres they write, and everything from mystery writers in there to speculative fiction to romance. I mean, just an amazing group. So, I mean, yeah, we had a lot of announcements, announced with that. So, yeah, we've got a lot of momentum going on with the Imaginarium front. And Holly knows. Did you have anything you wanted to say about our new additions?
No, not particularly. We got more in the works and more coming down the pike. And
a lot more.
We got some great guests. We got a lot of new faces, a lot of credentials, great guests for people that are, you know, thinking about attending. Get your tickets now. We have tons more to announce. This is our 10th year, so I'm working on a lot behind the scenes. Starting at the beginning of the year, we'll really be pumping out bigger announcements, you know, real big stuff. And I do. Can I tell about the masquerade ball? Can I tell what I want to do this coming year?
Sure. Yeah. All details are not up on the site yet. But yeah, go ahead and share it.
Not up on the site, guys. So you're the first to hear it. We're going to do a Roaring Twenties theme for the ball on Saturday night. It's going to be so fun. You don't have to dress up because, you know, dress in your favorite Twenties outfits. I plan to go Peaky Blinder route, you know, because I do love the Peaky Blinders. And so I will plan on getting my outfit together. But, yes, the Roaring Twenties. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a great theme. Of course, it's not mandatory. So, yeah, we definitely encourage you just to come to the ball. Enjoy yourself.
If you want to dress like
you have to be, yeah.
If you want to dress like your normal self, jeans and t-shirt, whatever, that's fine. If you want to dress like Pikachu, that's fine. You know, fandom, that's fine, you know. But, I did want to do a theme, and I think, because it is our 10th year, and I just thought it'd be fun for those that want to dress up, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast, and who knows, I may do my best Arthur impression, you know, if we're doing the 20s, right, Ollie?
Come in. I hope
as
so.
As a
you know who
Arthur.
I'm going to dress as. No, I'm not going to dress as Arthur. You know who I'm going to dress as. I'm dressing as Folly.
Yeah, I know you're going to say it rhymes with Folly. I knew that. So, but yeah, we're working hard, and we are going to get some the first wave of programming up on the site earlier than ever, I might add, because usually we don't put that up.
Yeah, I've already
spring.
Got workshops.
But we're going to go ahead and put a big batch of that up early. It's not by any means going to be the full list, but we want to go ahead and get some of the topics up so people can start getting excited, because these workshops are phenomenal, and we want to get the word out early about them.
Yep.
They're just content rich, and it's going to be a great, great programming a year at Imaginarium. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't wait to host some of what we already have. It's pretty amazing. But Holly's been working hard
already,
on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've already got several in the works, and really, really, really good stuff. Very informative.
Yeah.
Neat mm-hmm. presenters, you know, to pass this knowledge on. Very knowledgeable individuals mm-hmm. that know what they're talking about, man. They really do. It's a great way to, you know, lift yourself up, booster yourself, learn a few things. Because mm-hmm. no matter how much you know, you don't know everything, you know. We always learn. Each and every day we learn something.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. Absolutely awesome. So, I do want to say also, on the book front, I do have pre-orders up for my novella, Moments in Eternity. And it's going to be a great one that takes you into kind of a lore that's based on, like, tribal people such as the Navajo, the Hopi, the ancestral Puebloans, and the Four Corners region, kind of some of the mythologies and stuff there. That's kind of some of the inspirational turf that this story comes from, with a new character, Hong V, Shadowwalker. And I can't wait to get this out on November 23rd. Book format, and going well there, and I am chugging away in the writing front. I started a new Raiden Valkyrie novella back on September 26th, and I got over 3,200 words written today to take the total up to about 77,500 and a little over that, And so I'm pretty close to actually finishing the first draft of this novel that I just started on at the end of September. So, yeah, it's been pouring out, and you really had a strong vision of it. It's a story that's been percolating for a long time, actually since the end of the first Raiden trilogy, the ones, you know, Thunder Horizon, Heart of Lion, and When Shadows Fall, and it's been percolating since then, but I just could not get to it because I had to get new titles done in each of the other series. So, yeah, finally got to unleash on this one, and it's been roaring, and so I should have that first draft done in about probably another week, and then it's time, of course, to, you know, go through the passes to polish and, you know, do all the tweaks to it. But then it'll be ready for the editor. So, yeah, so we're motoring there. So yeah, a little update for myself actually for once here. And but yeah, tonight's show is brought to you by Sandy Lender, the genre blender, and the one, the only, Ren Garcia. And so tonight we're going to go first with Sandy, and then we'll give you a Ren spot and, of course, the famous question that we all love to answer. And so here we go. First, we will go with Sandy. Here we go.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay, but watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
Yes, folks, get a Lender Blender vampire satire. That's one of the coolest phrases to use, too. I love it. Thank you, Sandy, and you are the best. And hopefully, she's not with us tonight in the chat room. Hopefully, she's doing well wherever she are. I know she's doing a lot of travel and some cool stuff in her industry. So hopefully, having a good week. Yep, she's on the road,
though.
I believe.
I know she's on the road because she had a, it's not Blacktop.
The convention.
She sent me a question,
industry.
Though, but I didn't answer.
Yeah.
Concrete.
Well,
Asphalt industry. Yeah, she's doing some kind of conference with them this week.
Yep.
I know she's been down there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
She's on the road. But we'll get Sandy back in the chat room here by next week. But we also have for you a Ren Garcia spot. And I'll take the question tonight since I usually defer to Holly, but I'm going to go ahead and give the enthusiastic answer at the end. Here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, absolutely, Ren. We're weird enough.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, sir.
Yes. And hey, we got some news to give to you right before our guest calls in tonight. Looking in the chat room here. Looks like Amy has added to her piles and piles and piles of awards and accolades. She, at NewsFest, she just won Best Short Documentary, second place. So congrats to Amy McCorkle on that. Good job, Amy.
And guys, please check out Letters to Daniel on Amazon. It's on like
Amazon
Freebie,
yes.
Voodoo, stuff like that. So you check it out, Letters to Daniel.
Yes.
That's Amy's film about her battle with bipolar depression. It's changed.
Yes,
and,
definitely watch it.
I think you will enjoy it. Yes.
Yeah, it's on Roku as well.
It's also on Roku.
Roku,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we watched it on Prime, but yeah, it's on Roku as well.
Apple TV.
Carries it.
There you go.
And,
so anybody can watch it.
And she had more awards, evidently. Best True Story Narrative for Breaking Through and Best Music. So, yes, Amy has some good news to share. Just fantastic. Just keep
Amy
keeps
wrote
it up.
That song with Lena that Lena sent last year at the Imaginarium during our awards ceremony.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, Amy wrote that with her. It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yes, and good congratulations to you, Amy. And it's about time. It's about that time to bring aboard our guest. I see our guest is in queue, so I'm going to go ahead and give the introduction, and then we're going to get this underway. Tonight's guest is visiting us for the first time. And among her credits, she is a member of the Fuquay Varina Writers Guild and a certified ambassador for peace. Her first language was American Sign Language, which she taught at California State University at Northridge. But tonight, a big spotlight we're going to put on her book. And she's the author of Silence Isn't Golden, the powerful autobiographical story that addresses the subject of sexual abuse, the difficulties of living in a silent, hearing-impaired world, and the tragedy of siblings lost. Very powerful book, and we're really excited to welcome aboard the Star Chamber Show tonight our guest, Mary Louise Shelton. And hello, Mary, and your microphone should now be on. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me? This is Mary.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you.
We can hear you just fine.
Yeah, hear you great. Great, wonderful. And thank you for coming aboard the show tonight. Welcome. It's your first visit to the Star Chamber, as we call it. And we got our group in the chat room, and hopefully we'll get a few comments and questions from there. Go ahead. Feel free to introduce yourself a little bit. And, we're definitely going to start our discussion of your book. So if you'd like to give a little background on your book and yourself, I invite you to do so now, and we'll get into our conversation.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Holly. I really appreciate
you
having me. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. We're glad to have you.
Great. I really appreciate you both having me. It's my first podcast.
it's all about you tonight. It'll be all about Mary. So you are the guest, and we're going to discuss, everything that involves your writing process to, what actually got you to write this book in the first place, all that good stuff. So tell us a little bit about the book.
Okay, well, I will tell you that it's not a good story because the firstborn of my parents was stolen at birth, and the lastborn was murdered. So the firstborn was Henry, and because my parents were both considered deaf and dumb at that time, that's what they were called, and not, what they call them today is hearing impaired, but, back then they were called deaf and dumb. So because they were black and white, my father's white, my mother's black, they said, you just have to go home and have another one. We're going to take this one. We're going to take this baby, and you just go home and have another one. So they took that one. I'm still looking for that brother today because I don't have any siblings left. I've outlived them all. And then the last one, which is Junior, the one that was named after my father, he was murdered. So he was the baby. So the first one was taken from my parents, and the last one was murdered. So that those were the two tragic ones that I was mentioning in the book.
Right. And then there was also you had history of, you discussed there's abuse, sexual abuse. Did that involve you?
Yes, that was my mother's brother. My uncle Claude was the one that abused me, from a very little girl always. He came over and abused me, and there was really nobody that I could report it to other than my mother, and she just seemed to, you know, not really do anything about it. So, because he was her brother, and and that was a family member that abused me all the time. So that was an in-home family member that abused me, and come to find out that, you know, other family members outside the family knew about it, but they didn't, you know, want to pitch in. So I want to tell this to, since I am an interpreter for the deaf and hard of hearing, I heard a lot about this going on in homes and family members abusing, you know, people that have deaf children in the household, or deaf, you know, people that have deaf children, that they don't do anything about it when there's a family member involved. Well, now they have a lot more places to complain about it. You know, they have social media, and they have other different places that they can have a voice. I really didn't have a voice to complain outside of the house, but that's why I say silence isn't gold, and they swept it under the rug. But I think people today have a little bit more outreach than I did, you know. So I think that, you know, people today have a little bit more places that they can have a voice to complain. They have, you know, like you have different next door, and they have social media, and they have different places and resources that they can reach out and do something about the abuse that goes on.
Right, right. And like you said, it is hard when you tell your parents. I had a similar situation that was happening to me. It was my uncle, but it was my dad's sister's wife, husband. So he was an uncle by marriage, you know. And I told my parents when I was younger, but, yeah, they just kind of blew it, you know, put it under the rug. And I think it's a generational thing, too. I think nowadays people take it more serious, you know, and when the kids say something like that, you listen, you know, we know to listen to them and take it seriously, where I think that generation, so much of this abuse got just shoved and swept under the rug, and people just didn't talk about it. It was just like, you know, women when they got raped, you know, different things like that, they just didn't talk about it. And, you know, it was just swept under the rug. And then, you know, you were stuck in that situation. And as a child, what can you do? You know, you can't get out of that situation. You're not old enough. You're not capable yet. And so you're just stuck in that you know, state of abuse. And you just endure it, you know, and I applaud you for being brave enough to share your story and to actually write a book about this. I mean, that's incredible that you actually, you know, bared your soul, so to speak, and wrote the book, which I plan on getting. My daughter-in-law is also going to purchase it today. She was going to put it on. I think she's doing Kindle, but she wanted the paperback. But and then a friend of hers is buying it. So you're going to sell some more books today, and I like it. Yeah, I mean, your story is truly fascinating. And you had so many things working against you, and that you rose above. And it's just a fascinating story, and I do applaud you. You're incredible, an incredible woman for rising above all that. And I do want to ask, what was the process? How did you get out of that loop? I mean, because I know your parents were hearing impaired, and you were their interpreter, correct? You actually?
That is so.
Okay.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So did they work at all outside the home, or what was the situation?
Yes, my father worked. He worked at making ball bearings for cars. He was white, so we were never allowed to go to his job because he was white and my mother was black, she was a stay-at-home mom. And so she stayed at home, and fortunately we were not poor, you know, but we were not allowed on this job. But yes, there were a lot of things that I had to overcome. But God, I have to give God the credit for all of the things that I overcame, because that's the only thing that, you know, I was able to get through all of it was, you know, by the grace of God. You know, it really was, because the school did not help me. The teachers were not helpful at all. The neighbors were not helpful, and the relatives were not helpful. So I have to say that God was my only help, you know, because I can't say that, you know, anybody else was helpful to me growing up. So I have to give all the credit to God. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, he gave you the strength.
He
gave you the strength and the ability to rise above this, you know.
Yes.
How did you, I mean, how old were you when you actually left home?
I got married and left home at 16. I got married and left home at 16 because I really hated. She was so strict about everything, and my mother really made it a point to let me know she didn't even want any girls, even though I was the only one interpreting for her. The two boys did not interpret for her. She still made it a point that she did not. She beat me every day.
She beat me
every day, and she made it a point to say she did not like girls. And she was raised in the South where they favored boys, and they did not favor girls. And so she and the police, you know, my brother took me to the police station and said, you know, he was tired of seeing me beat. And the police told the police said, really, she will outlive the beating, but she will, you know, if you bring her back to the police station, she will be put into the system, and they will rape, you know, the system will probably rape her. And, you know, so she take her back home and let her continue to be beat by my mother. So my mother would beat me every day.
Where were you living?
I lived in Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, this is
so
in
Detroit.
So
you think it was like a, do you think that race played a part of that then?
I didn't look at it as race playing a part of it. I really didn't look at it as race. I really don't know if race played a part of it. You know, I just think that, you know,
well,
I wonder
with the police not listening to you. You know, there was a lot of racism still, you know, back then. I mean, there still is, but I mean, it was a lot worse back then. And that's what I was wondering if that played a part.
Yeah, it might have been. I really didn't look at it. I know that race played a part of it with my brother being murdered, because when he was murdered, I told them that, you know, I knew who murdered my brother, and they said, you don't have any witnesses. And they said, you know, even though the murderer had blood on his clothing, and you know who did it, they said, you know, you didn't see who did it. And so they kept the guy, and I told them, you know, who did it was John Outlaw. They said, no, you know, we kept him for 3 days, and he has his blood, but see, that was before DNA. So they said, no, you know, you're just a nobody. And so unless you have, you know, an eyewitness, you know, we're just going to let him go.
Oh.
So I think race played a part in that. They let him go. They said, you know, you don't have an eyewitness, and you don't have the actual weapon. Yeah, so they let him go.
So did he ever pay for this? I mean, is he still he never did?
No, he never did. I have a lady in Texas now, Regina Romain, who is with the FPI, Forensic Paranormal Investigation, who wants to try to open a case for, she wants to do a, since it's a cold case, to try to reopen it. And so I'm
That's
hoping
what I was saying,
for that.
Because of DNA, you know, now we're capable of extracting, you know, I mean, God forbid they'd have to exhume your brother, but, you know, if it's going to solve this case and bring the killer to some kind of justice, to me, it would be worth it.
Correct.
It would be.
Correct. Correct. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. And yes, absolutely. And I'm praying that she will be able to close this case for me.
Well, that's going to be a whole other book, because that is just fascinating. I mean, honestly, your journey through this, you know, is a whole other book. I mean, the whole journey will be, you know, as it plays out. Just incredible. And I hope they truly get to the bottom of it, and that, you know, that the murderer does get some justice, that you do see justice done. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I hope so as well. And there was also a hidden figure in the book. The first black graduate of Gallaudet was a friend of my mom, Andrew Foster. Yes, Andrew Foster was, he was a friend of my mom. She was the first black deaf graduate at Gallaudet, and he opened up 35 schools for the deaf in Africa.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's incredible. Is your parents still alive?
No, my mother passed away in 2005, and she lived to be 102.
Wow.
Yes, she did. She turned, and she at 95 she, you know, turned over a new leaf, and she, you know, became very loving and sweet, and she was mean as a snake, but at 95 the Lord changed her heart, and she was sweet and very loving towards me, and, you know, we had a wonderful, you know, a life, you know, at the end of her life. She was very, very sweet. And, you know, she had, the end of her life was wonderful. She played checkers. She played bingo. And she was in her right mind. And she lived to a great age of 102. And my dad lived to be 88. So she outlived him by 14 years.
That is great, though, that the relationship got repaired. But I've seen that even with my own mother. My mother is still mean as a snake. But you know, when I was younger, she was something else to me. And it was, you know, she didn't want me either. She had me when she's 39. My brothers were 16 and 18 when I was born. You know, she was done, and then oops, here come me. You know, and so that didn't make her too happy. And but both of my brothers have passed in recent years; they're both gone. It's only me. So I ended up, you know, having to care for her. Dad changed, and now she's softer toward me. You know, things have changed a little bit because she knows without me, she'd have been in a mess.
Well,
my dad, you'd do everything.
She'd have problems
and
without
my dad
you.
Just passed. Dad passed in August.
Yeah.
So dad just passed. So, you know, I'm all left a mom and, you know, to her. So, yeah, she's a little bit softer toward me. But, yeah, she's still mean to a lot of people. And
I'm glad to hear that, though, Mary. I'm glad to hear that, Mary, because it echoes some of the stuff my father went through, because he had a rough period with his father growing up and throughout most of his adulthood, but toward the end of my grandfather's life, he softened as well and had kind of a change of heart, and they ended up having closure and had a much better relationship at the end. So that's why I always say never say never. People can change if they want to, and that's good to hear. That is impressive, that is very impressive.
Was she completely deaf, or was they ever able to, with modern technology, give her like a hearing aid that helped her hear some things, or was she completely deaf?
No, both my parents were completely deaf. They both were born that way. They met here in North Carolina, here at the Governor Moorhead School for the Deaf. They met and they lived there 9 months out of the year. But here in North Carolina, it was illegal for them to marry here. They lived there 9 months and they both went their separate ways, 3 months out of the year. She went to where she lived in Williamston, and he lived in Colfax. So they were not allowed to marry here in North Carolina. So they didn't get married to them in their 30s. Yeah, so
well,
they couldn't get married here. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Detroit's a rough place. I mean, even today, there's parts of it just don't want to go to.
Exactly. Because when my brother was murdered there, I bought 3 plots, one for my brother and one for my mom and dad. However, who knew that I would end up relocating here, because I was in California and then I came here actually really to find a husband. I still haven't found one.
Well, that's good.
But I
you
was here and I haven't found the Lord is still preparing somebody for me. I'm still waiting. But my father is buried next to his parents in a private cemetery. And they told me, they said, you're not going to bury your mother here. You're not going to bury your mother here. Oh. This is a private white cemetery. So you cannot bury your mother here. Yeah,
well,
they said, this is a private white cemetery. You can bury your father here, but only if you agree not to ask to bury your mother here. You cannot ask that question, burying your mother here is off limits. In 1998, when I buried him, they said, it's only on the condition that you do not ask not to bury your mother here, because it's off limits to your mother.
See, that just blows my mind. And
yeah,
that's what said we.
Too.
Being 1998.
Right.
That's what
I
said, being 1998. But there's so much of that. That's what I said, that goes on that we don't know about. It blows our mind when we get to talking to a lot of our friends from different races, and they tell us these stories. And, I mean, recent stories, just years past. And, I mean, it just blows our mind, because we don't hear about it. You don't hear about it in mainstream media.
Yeah.
You don't hear about it, in our groups, you just don't hear about those things. To me, it's mind-blowing that we even have to be discussing race in 2023, 2022. It just blows my mind that we're still even discussing it, because we are one race. We're all human. And the color of your skin don't matter worth diddly. And so I've never understood it. But it still goes on.
Yeah.
And more of it's coming out now. And our eyes are open. And we know, so much of this has happened now, and it's just mind-boggling. It truly is. I don't understand how people sleep at night that think that way. I don't get it. So with his family, did they not, I mean, do you still have a relationship with them at all, or did they just like?
I do not have a relationship with them.
Well, I don't blame
them. I mean, only ones I have a relationship with are the ones I did a DNA test on, because I'm still looking for the brother stolen at birth. So I found some cousins of mine that, you know, that are flabbergasted that I told them that, you know, my father is buried in the cemetery. So these are cousins on my dad's side. You know, I found a cousin of mine who says that her grandfather is my father's brother. And so she's in Arizona, and I just met her.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so I just met her in 2019. And so she says that her grandfather and my father are brothers. And I'm saying, really?
That's an uncle.
Have you ever done one of those chromosome testing, like 23andMe or something like that? Because let me tell you why. Well, they saved a family tree. They saved, there's a database, right? So whoever else has done it goes in that database. And when you do it, it flags. It flags all these relatives, all these people that are closely related to you that have also done the DNA test. And it is just possible you may find him.
Yes, I'm trying. I am definitely trying. I am absolutely. I just did the 23andMe, but I did the DNA.
Right.
Yes, I did. But, yes, I hired a private detective when my mother was 100, and I went on. You know, I wrote to Barbara Walters. I thought that, you know, I could find the brother while my mother was still living for her 100th birthday.
Right.
I was trying to find, you know, and Barbara Walters, you know, didn't think the story was interesting enough that a baby stolen at birth, because she did a story, stolen at birth, and she did it on TV, but she didn't think mine was that interesting. So, but Zelda Robinson did, so I flew to Chicago and did a show on TV in Chicago, Stolen at Birth. And a private detective said he found 7 male babies stolen at birth, but we lost track of the seven male babies. But we couldn't find the 7 male babies. Ran out of money, and we couldn't locate the 7 male babies while my mother was still living.
Have you wrote Oprah?
I have, but it doesn't go anywhere because she feels all of her mail. But yes, I've tried writing Oprah.
I was gonna say because. Yeah, I know Oprah has the money to help a lot of people.
But
I'll tell you another one is Tyler Perry.
Right.
You
I've
know
tried
the
Medea writing.
Movie?
Yeah.
Tyler
yes,
Perry
I have.
An awesome human being.
Yes. I've tried that route as well. Apparently they feel the people that write to him as well.
Huh. Well, I'm going to think on it because I'm pretty good. I write about anybody. I talk to everybody. I don't care. I just say all they can do is tell me no. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
This is fascinating. It would make a great television series, you know, a documentary, because documentaries are really big right now. And if you could get one of the, like, either HBO Max or Amazon Prime or Netflix or Hulu or somebody – interested in doing a documentary on the finding of your brother, I mean, that would work. You know, they could fund the whole thing to get them interested.
Right, because Coda just won at the Oscars. Coda won. Nessa was Child of Deaf Adults, won at the Oscars. So I said, well, you know, maybe I should try it all over again. Yes, I would, because
documentaries are huge right now. A true crime, huge. right now.
Yeah.
So now's the time to really pursue this, and I would. I would go back and write the network executives.
Right, exactly.
And there's so many streaming services now. You know, there's so many now. There's Paramount, there's, you know, Stars, there's, you know, and like I said, the Hulu, the Netflix, the Prime. There's so many of them now. And, I would just blow them all up. You know, I'd be blowing up their emails and saying, hey, listen, I've got a story to tell, you know. Yeah.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Because he's out there somewhere, you know. He went somewhere.
Yeah.
Why did they think these babies were stolen? I mean, was it a black market situation? Or
Right.
Where did they go? Where did the
second thing? Yes. Because he was a biracial baby, somebody, you know, didn't want to go through having to go through the adoption process. And it was a biracial baby, you know, somebody didn't want to go through the whole process. And they were taking them because my mother's roommate told her, do not have any more babies at this particular hospital because this hospital is known for taking babies away from handicapped people. So she did not have any of us at that hospital. She, you know, went to another hospital to have the rest of her babies. So that hospital was known for abusing the handicap.
So did he even have a birth name? I mean, was he named?
Yeah, I have the birth certificate.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Yeah, I have the birth certificate. Yes,
but see,
I
that's
have
where the paper trail ends.
Correct.
Because
right.
they have not used his name at all. They've changed it. And everything.
Correct.
So there's not even a paper trail. It's going to have to be DNA. And hopefully he has found out that, you know, maybe his parents have told him, the ones that raised him, told him, we adopted you, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully they've told him that. And he has done one of the, you know, 23andMe or something like that. Or he will and get curious himself. But maybe
that's
he don't know, you know. That's the other part of it.
Right, exactly.
I think that's where the media
indeed.
Comes in, though. The media that, like, they're talking about, you know, getting a show together because there's so many people that will then start working for you out there and spreading the word and doing research themselves because you see that with a lot of crime shows. But hopefully, you know, you can get that kind of opportunity and somebody get some people out there to help you find them.
Right. Cause
well, my daughter-in-law is blowing up the stats. She said she's all in. She's invested. She needs to get these answers. She really wants to help. She said she'll help you go digging. She's serious.
Yes,
she will.
Yes. C.C. Moore is a famous one.
Well, could you tell us his birth name? In case somebody out there happens to know.
She named him Henry. Henry is the name she gave him, Henry. Henry Jones.
And what would his last name been?
Jones.
Uh-huh.
Right, and he was born in
1944. Uh-huh. Yeah, he'd have been my dad's age. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd been born in
1944.
Yeah.
What hospital?
The hospital no longer exists. It's been torn down in Detroit.
It was in Detroit?
It was in Detroit. But the hospital no longer exists.
No longer there.
It's been torn. Yeah, it's torn down.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law, Beck, said she's going to do some digging. She's serious. She will, too. She will dig because she's all into this, and it is fascinating, and would love to find him. I mean, that would just be
wonderful.
Incredible to get you two back together, you know?
Right. I'm at my computer. Let me pull up his birth certificate. Let me get the correct month and date, just in case somebody.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep. Somebody out here may have some information. I mean, you just
right.
You just don't know, you know. And that's
yeah.
how things happen. That's how God works too, you know.
That's right. That's right. The date of birth is September
7th, 1944. September 7th, 1944.
That yeah, that was the exact date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Got it down.
That was the exact date. So if somebody have a birth date around that time frame, but that was
right.
the exact date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too bad Social Security wasn't easier to look through, because you know they're going to have to, you know, unless they change his birth date, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that could have happened
yeah.
too.
Social Security database. Yeah.
Yeah, the Social Security database, but they could have changed his date if they would have drawn up a new birth certificate.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But That's exactly right. But I know that the guy that I hired in California said there were 7 male babies in Detroit born on that day.
And they all were stolen?
No. He just said he knew he could track down 7 male babies on my mother's 100th birthday. But then he tells me that it cost too much to give me those 7 names.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
As I said, I would seriously go back to the networks. I really would.
Yeah, right.
Just, yeah, you've got a good
mm-hmm.
story for them. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
That would
And then
that
tell
would
them, you know, you'd love
mm-hmm.
to write a book about it, too. You know, you'd love to,
mm-hmm.
to share that.
Right.
Yeah, and you've already
you know,
got
with,
your
with everyone.
Other, you've got your
mm-hmm.
book already out there to show them, you know, so I think that would help for sure, but
yeah.
Wow.
Mhm. So, what inspired you to decide to go ahead and write the book? I mean, when did you say, "Well, I'm gonna sit down and share my story"?
Well, it was really William Paul Young's book, his story, The Shack. The same thing basically happened to him, and I think it was very cathartic for me to just sit down and write it. It was a healing for me to write it. It was just a very healing experience for me to write it. And so when I joined this book club with the Writers Guild, they were very encouraging for me to sit down and write it, and they were very helpful and you know, helping me edit it and getting it, you know, published. So it was just a very cathartic experience to heal and to get it written, and I think it's going to be helpful for the deaf community that I know don't have a voice, because being an interpreter all my life, I've heard mostly from the little girls and boys that they're suffering because they don't have a voice. Because
right.
if I could get the book out, and I'm going to be doing a book signing soon here in Fuquay. I did more book signings before the pandemic. And now I think that, you know, after this podcast, you know, that I can do some book signings and maybe get the word back out. And now that CODA won at the Oscars, that I should be able to get the word back out, because the pandemic has a lot of people closed up under the same roof, suffering the same abuse again. And so, and it,
right.
you know, I think it's time to get the book back out, and for me to get the word back out that people are, you know, need to know that, you know, this abuse has to stop. You know, this abuse has to stop, and we got to get the word back out. And we have to, you know, support one another and lift each other up and
exactly.
stop sweeping stuff under the rug and know that we
right.
have to be need support for one another. We have to prop each other up and be there for one another, because that is the second commandment, is that, you know, we have to love one another.
Well, that's true. Absolutely.
We love God and love one another. In order to do that, if you see something, you have to say something. You can't just not do anything. You have to do something about it. Right.
Right.
And you brought up an important point. I've read a lot of things about this. One of the untold stories of the pandemic is the fact that a lot of people were forced to be quarantined or kept in the house or stay at home with predators. You know, where they were going to work or school, or, you know, they were, you know, able to get away of some, you know, at least for that time out of the house. But, yeah, that even, I think, exacerbated the situation and made it worse for a lot of people. So, yeah, I think, the timing of your outreach is very valuable. And you know, who knows, we might have to, you know, there may be a time where we have to go through something like that again. But definitely definitely think that your outreach, the timing is really needed for that. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot more channels to reach out and get help than there were just even, you know, 10 years ago.
Oh, yes, it is. It is. It really, really is. Because a lot of people are, you know, sheltering in place, you know, with their abuser. And
mm-hmm. Right.
If you see something, you have to say something. You can't just sweep it under the rug. And you got to be a voice for somebody. You know, if you see something, you got to say something. You got to do something. You just cannot, you know, be silent and consider yourself, you know, being a person that's, you know, with a voice. You got to use your voice and got to do something about it. You really have to be a person with a reason. You have a reason to help somebody. You got to be there for
right.
your neighbor. You know, be a good neighbor and that's what the Lord wanted
a
us
good
to
human.
Do for one another. Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Be
now,
a
good
want,
human.
Be
and,
a good
and
human.
I want,
you got that.
And that right. the, And that is a good segue for the next question that I have for you, and that is,
okay.
you know, I saw reading your story that you are a certified ambassador for peace, and I wanted to know a little bit more about how that works and how you came about becoming a certified ambassador for peace.
There's two ladies. I don't remember both of their names right off the top of my head. I should have gone and got that since you put that in there. But both of them are two different religions, and both of them, you know, said that it doesn't matter what religion you are. God is not really a God of religions. You know, he doesn't really tout religions. You know, he touts the fact that we are a God of love. And we
right.
should love one another because of the fact that, you know, we do have just one blood, and that we
right.
should be, you know, loving one another because of the fact that we, you know, are one blood, and we shouldn't tout the fact that, you know, one religion is better than another. So, and that's how we got involved in being an ambassador for peace. One of the things was that my mother was in her latter years, she was moved to a facility in Ohio. And I was at a dinner table with a bishop and here in North Carolina, and there were several bishops at the table. And I said, you know, they said the waiting list for this facility was quite high. And he said that he was a bishop from Ohio. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And come to find out, you know, the Lord opened up the door for her to go to this facility, and it was a wonderful facility. And I think that's the only reason she made it to be 102, is because there were 60 other deaf people in this facility, and all of the people that worked there, you know, spoke sign language, and I was able to communicate with her every day, and because I worked for the airline, I could fly there, you know, at any time that I wanted to. So it was, and he, when I, you know, flew there, he was able to, from the airport, and me and my mom, but it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, you know, to have all these people with all these different religions together at just one table.
Neat.
But yes, yeah.
That
so
is neat.
Yeah. So they were all together. So we all, you know, were together at the same dinner, and all of us, the different, you know, Baptists, Muslims, Pentecostal, Catholic, all of them together, you know, at one table. So it doesn't matter what the religion is. Peace is the outcome that we're all looking for, is a peace. Peace and love. Yeah.
Very nice.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that was great.
And like you said, I believe there's good in every religion. You know,
yes,
there's no
yes.
religion that's 100% right, because we don't know a lot of things until we're gone from this world. We won't know until then. So the mystery will stay a mystery, because that God is a mystery, you know, at times. And he only lets us know what we need to know right now and go on. So, yeah, I truly believe you can learn something from every religion.
Right.
And there is
right.
good people in all of them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And there's bad
yeah.
people too, just like in the world. There's good and bad everywhere you go, you know, in all occupations and everywhere. But yes, there is truth in every religion. And especially all that are focused on the one God, you know, that, you know, we all believe in the same God, whether you're Jewish or Christian or, you know, you know, whatever you are there, it's still the same God. It's just a different way of presenting it, you know, from your Baptist
right.
to your Methodist
right.
to your Catholics. It's still the same God. It's just a different
right.
way of, you know, worshiping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right,
so that's beautiful.
Right. Yes,
that
peace is peace is peace and love is the thread that kind of runs through the same vein. If we have peace and love, regardless of what you call that, you know, their religion and what they're
mm-hmm.
studying, I think peace and love is the thread that, the common thread.
Right. I always say love and light, which is the same thing.
Yes.
You know, spread.
Yes.
Spread love and light, and
yes.
try to, you know, find the good in everybody, because there is some good in everybody. Even if they're struggled and, you know, maybe got a mean streak or, you know, you don't know how their people have been raised, or, you know, it's true. You don't know everybody that you meet. You know, they could be as mean as all get out, but you don't know how they've been raised or what they've went through. You don't know people's past traumas. You don't know everybody's, you know, you don't know their story. All have stories. We all have some kind of trauma that we've endured through our lives. You know, if you haven't, you're one lucky person. But yeah, I believe everybody's had something, you know, or some sort of death that you've had to deal with, or something, because that's part of being human, you know. And
right,
we're all human,
right.
So we do need to show empathy toward everyone, you know,
right.
in the human
right.
race. And I think right. I think the younger generations are catching on to that a little bit more now, which is good. Their eyes are being opened to, you know, seeing how bad people were treated in the past, how to be more accepting of everyone. Because I always said Jesus wasn't preaching to saints. He was preaching to sinners. You know, the saints
yes,
are already
yes.
saved. They're already good. But it's the sinners, you know. So you don't judge everybody by their outward appearance or their outward actions. You know, you can't be judging everybody. You just love them and go on. You hate the sin, but don't have to hate the sinner, you know. That's
correct.
The way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You're absolutely correct
so, yeah,
about that.
I believe that's beautiful. doing that. So do you guys plan to get together like ever so often and do like a little summit, or was this like a one-time thing?
No. They do get together a little bit more often than I do because I've had some health challenges. So I haven't been able to get together with them lately, but they do. They get together probably twice a year. Mm-hmm. They do get together twice a year. I just haven't been able to meet up with them. But, yeah, they send me the emails when they meet up together. So, yeah, they do meet up every single year, twice a year.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they do.
And I wanted to ask you, too, about, I know, you know, American Sign Language has been a very important part of your life, and you took it in a formal direction because, you know, you taught at California State University at Northridge. So I wanted to just see what guided you to formally become a teacher and at the university level, and what was your experience like in that kind of sphere?
Well, I just wanted to teach it because of the only reason I chose to teach it at Cal State Northridge was because of the interaction with the police officers. I lived in Van Nuys in the valley there, and it was really a course that I wanted to make sure that all the police, you know, the interaction with the police were very, very difficult. And it still is today, you know, with the Black Lives That Matter back then, it was very difficult. And I wanted to make sure that the interaction with the police, that everybody would know how to interact with the deaf community. So I wanted to make sure that the interaction, because it was during the time, I forget the guy's name that had a bad reaction with the back then. It was a horrible thing. Rodney King, I think. Back when Rodney King.
So it was during that time.
I lived in the valley, and I wanted to make sure that the police officers, they had a good experience with the deaf community. So that's why I taught sign language there. But, that's the only reason.
Wow.
Yeah, so Black Lives Matter. And so that was before that logo hit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep, well, that was before then. Well, I think all police should know and learn about different mental disabilities and how they present, and then, of course, sign language, because they have mistakenly arrested people for being drunk, belligerent, you know, combative, whatever, that are having, you know, maybe mental health episodes, or they're deaf and they're trying to communicate, and they've taken it on as, oh, you're trying to smack me or attack me or, you know, something like that. I mean, they've mistakenly arrested so many people thinking that they were, you know, on drugs or something, and it's not been the case. So it is so important, and I think it should be mandatory that they learn, they take a course in mental illnesses.
Absolutely.
And how it presents. And
absolutely.
Learn sign language.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Social EMT. Absolutely correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
Paramedic.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree with
all
you
of
wholeheartedly.
Them.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I really do agree that they should. I don't know if that's part of the course for them to have, you know, but I think, you know, for them, that's the reason I did it then, but I don't know if it's a requirement here in North Carolina or where you are. You're in Kentucky?
Kentucky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Central Kentucky.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if the police are required to learn it there, but, yes, I absolutely agree that they should at least know the alphabet. They can learn the alphabet in 10 minutes.
Yep.
You know, anybody can learn the alphabet in 10 minutes. So if you could just know the alphabet, that would be a requirement, you know, to learn the alphabet.
Right.
And you don't have to know anything more than just the alphabet. Then, you know, that would be a requirement to just be able
spell,
to. Just learn the alphabet. That's not asking too much.
That could de-escalate some situations, like Holly said, that flare up into something much worse, you know, because, you know, they don't read the signs right. It
Correct.
Well, people get shot. They've shot people because they think, you know, that they're attacking them or that they're being violent toward them, and that's not the case. They're trying to communicate. They're doing sign language, or, you know, they're really upset that they're having an illness breakdown, and they're very upset and trying to communicate that. And, or, you know, there's all kinds of different things, and they've mistaken as a drug addict or alcoholic or, you know, all these other things, and this has not been the case. So, I think it's very important. There's a thin line there. And it's literally life and death for a lot of people. It's life and death.
I agree. And, you know, anybody could learn the alphabet. It's, you know, it's not difficult to learn the alphabet. And it wouldn't be that much of a requirement for, you know, a police officer to learn the alphabet.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you.
100%. And like I said, there's bad seeds in every occupation, you know. There's good cops with bad cops. You know, are just, they're just bad seeds anyway. And it's just like nurses. I was a nurse for over 2 decades. I worked as a nurse, and due to health reasons, I had to stop. But I've seen so many nurses I worked with that I wouldn't let touch me with a 10-foot pole, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
It's good and bad in every, you know, in the medical field even. You know, it's the truth. There's people that just don't need to be doing the job they're in. They do it for a paycheck, and that's it. And that's a sad reality, and that's not going to change. But we have to change the ones that truly want to. We have to change the system to weed out those, you know. If they're not going to learn the you know, the sign language, and they're not willing to learn about the mental illness, well, you ain't got no business being in that profession. You know, move on.
Right. I agree with you, Holly. I absolutely agree with you. Absolutely agree with you.
Get a different profession. Go sell vacuums.
And I think it edifies the good ones. And what I mean by that is because, you know, we do have some, there's no question that crime is rising fast in a lot of cities right now, and it's violent crime. And a lot of officers are you know, really in you know, on edge because they're going in areas where they really are attacked, and they really are, you know, dealing with very violent situations, very volatile situations. And by getting a better understanding of these things, and, you know, going through some training in this area, it can help the good ones that really do have to make split second decisions for their own safety to be able to discern which ones are, you know, we're really dealing with something bad here, or we're dealing with something that, you know, that can be de-escalated and you know, somebody has, you know, something like that. And so I think it's, you know, it's good for not only dealing with the bad eggs, but it also is empowering the good cops too that are out there and helping them make the
distinctions. That's what I'm saying. The ones that are willing to do the work and learn and want to learn because they actually want to protect the community and do what's right, you know. That's the ones we've got to empower, you know, to stop them. And it's just the way it is. And that's the way society, that's the way we grow. That's the way we get better. You know, we have to do better. And every year that this, you know, we go on and on and on. You learn from your mistakes. We all do. We all learn from our mistakes. And we need to learn history, because history tends to repeat itself. You need to learn history, people, because you learn a lot. You know, you go back and say, ooh, I've seen, this has happened before, and look where it led to. You know, it's not good. So
I like the saying that history doesn't necessarily repeat exactly, but it sure does rhyme. And
you
see patterns. And when you see those patterns, you can recognize what's happening or what's coming, and you can deal with it. And that's part of this, you know. This is on an individual level. If you can see, you know, the pattern or recognize the situation, then you can de-escalate it. And that's what we all hoped for. So, you're doing great work in this area, and you're very proactive. I mean, you became a writer. You saw a need for instructor at a college level in ASL. You became an ambassador for peace in an interfaith group. And I mean, I just love it. I mean, you're a go-getter. You're one of the people that doesn't just sit there.
Yeah, I mean, you could have turned out a whole different way. You know, the way what you went through, you could have been a criminal. You could have been, you could have lashed out a whole different way. But you have chose to take what you went through and let that make you strong and let that make you proactive and helping the community. Just think of the people that you have helped. I mean, it's unbelievable. And God has gave you these gifts to be able to, you know, do the sign language and do the teaching and the ambassador, the peace ambassadorship. And it's just incredible, you know, that you've done that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. But I want to encourage others to, you know, to be part of the solution. If you see a problem, be part of the solution.
Yep.
And to, you know, if they're uncomfortable, you know, still be part of the solution. If they find something, you know, don't just ignore it and sweep it under the rug, because, this is a thing with this pandemic situation. I know that there are people that are, you know, in situations that they're going to be uncomfortable. And, you know, people have got to speak up and use their voice. They have got to do it, and people have got to not, you know, look the other way. They just cannot do that.
Nope.
They cannot continue to look the other way and think that it's okay to look the other way. It's not. It's not okay. It's just not okay.
No.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
And if you can't help it, if you can't do something to help that situation, then find somebody who can. You know, like you said, don't turn away from it and ignore it and think, well, there's nothing I can do. Well, find somebody who can. Report it. Share it with someone who can. You know?
That is
correct.
Yeah,
ask
that
questions.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is correct. Because inaction, doing nothing makes you part of the problem.
Yep.
Doing nothing makes
you
part of the problem. You're a part of the problem if you're doing nothing about it. If you're seeing it and you knowing it's going on, you are part of the problem. So, and don't 100%. Think you're not. You are. You're 100% part of the problem. And I believe that all of those people that saw that I was going through it and did nothing about it were part of the problem. And they cannot say that they weren't, because they were, because people saw that what was going on with me and my parents, and did absolutely zero about it, knew exactly what was going on, did nothing about it. But, you know, God brought me through it, but, I mean, what about all the people that just sat back and did absolutely nothing?
Right.
So I don't understand how people sleep at night. I don't either. I never will. I couldn't live with myself if I knew something like that was going on and I wasn't doing everything in my power to help the situation or do something.
Right.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. That is correct. Because I even put my job on the line. And just for an example, I was interpreting for a patient who had an operation on her hand. Now she's deaf. And she's mute. Now they operated on one of her hands, and and her hand was they put her hand tied to the bed, so she only got one hand to push the buzzer for the nurse. Now 8 hours, they've got her hand tied, and so there's only one hand for the buzzer. Now, it is illegal for me as an interpreter to feed this patient because feeding is supposed to be done by a staff of the hospital.
Right.
Not for the interpreter.
Right.
So because they're saying that the interpreter's job is to interpret, not to feed the patient. But I'm saying
right.
if this patient is my mother and nobody comes to feed her, job is it to feed her. If she's been ignored for 8 hours, then whose job is it to feed her? It's my job.
Well, yeah, anybody that's around. Yeah.
Right. So I decided, you know, she's been ignored for 8 hours, and it's becoming the end of my shift for the next interpreter to come. I'm going
right.
to break the rule, and I'm going to feed her because I said she's been ignored already. I pushed the buzzer. She's pushed the buzzer, and the hospital has ignored her for 8 hours. So I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and break the rule, and I'm going to go ahead and feed her. Well, I go ahead and feed her because I said this could be my mother, and she can't. She's not going
exactly.
The next interpreter is not going to do it. So the next uh-huh. interpreter comes early, and she sees me feeding her and reports me. She reports me, and so naturally, you know, I'm a private interpreter, so they call me, and they say, well, Mary, I already know why you did it, but you're already fired. Because
oh.
who gets fired? Well, I knew she was going to report me.
Oh,
But the agency that hired me said, I already know why you did it, but because I know you're a CODA, your parents are deaf, and I know why you did it, but it still doesn't mean that you're not going to get fired because who, you know, but I can sleep at night. I can care less about getting fired.
Well, that's it.
I can care less.
That's it.
I can care less about it. I'll get another job, but at least I can sleep tonight because I know she got fed. And because the next person is not going to care. The next interpreter is not going to care whether she gets fed or not. I can sleep tonight. So I can get another job.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Right, that's it.
You know, it really yeah. doesn't matter. But that's the thing. Can you mm-hmm. sleep at night? Yes, I can
right.
sleep. I can
yeah,
sleep because I answer to a higher
that's
job. God. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that's
right.
it. I
a higher
sleep.
Boss.
I can sleep. Right. Right.
Well,
so it
well,
doesn't bother.
That,
right. Doesn't bother.
Kind of on that topic, as we get the last few minutes of the show in here, I think an important question from all your experience and working with people and dealing with situations and so forth. You know, a lot of people, you know, kind of may sense that something is happening to somebody or sense that something might be going on, but that person may not have opened up to them. Can you give any advice just based on your experience of how to approach somebody, how to maybe get them to talk to you or how to get them to share something like this, you know, which they may be very afraid to share. What is your advice on how to approach and how to get somebody to open up about some kind of abuse that's going on?
Oh, that's a hard one. That is a difficult one. I you would have to, you know, use your own gut instinct on that one. You know, every mm-hmm. every instance is different, you know. So they would have to, you know, use their gut instinct on the situation, you know. Because, I mean, I've gone to pastors and said, you know, I think that, you know, this particular child is, you know, being abused. I've gone to a pastor and, you know, in certain situations and say that, you know, I think you should intervene in this household because, you know, it's outside of, you know, this my parameter as an interpreter. I can't involve myself, and I've tried to get pastors to intervene in my behalf. So it depends on the situation. You have to try to see which way, you know, you can intervene, but do something, you know, just try
right.
different avenues, you know, social workers, pastors, teachers, try something, mm-hmm. you know, try something, try
exactly.
whatever, you know, try something, but, you know, just don't sit back and do
whatever's
nothing.
Whatever's in your
in
power
hand.
To do.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And like
exactly.
I said, if you can't do something, find somebody who can, you know?
Right, exactly, exactly,
yep.
yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, try to do something. Try different avenues until you can get some kind of result. Yeah,
right.
But,
and we've
got to
break down all
it.
These stigmas. All these stigmas
right,
need
right.
to be broken down and gone so women and, well, not just women. There's men, too. But it can come forth and you know, tell, right? There's people that can help you, that are willing to help you. Not everybody
right.
is going to ignore you. There are people that will help you. Keep reaching out until you find that person because they do
right.
exist.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Don't give
exist.
Up.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's right.
You know,
do not give up.
Be a warrior. Don't be a victim. Be a warrior. Hang in there.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. Exactly. That is correct. You definitely have to not give up and God will not give up on you, so don't give up. So that
right.
is no. definitely my mantra, do not give up.
Yeah, and we got a good comment from the chat room, which actually ties to you, Mary, because, you know, writing. And, you know, you wrote a book about this to share and to help people, you know, and reach out. But in the chat room, Kenzie Michael said, writing itself can be very therapeutic. It says she was involved in an emotionally abusive relationship for about a year, and she used that experience as a plot device for one of her fiction books. So, I mean, yeah, writing can also, yeah, be a good channel to, you know, express.
It's a good
and, what in
yep.
your case, not nonfiction. Her case, she used fiction, but yeah, writing
right.
is a creative outlet. So that's a mm-hmm. yeah, that's definitely a good comment. But we're coming up on 3 minutes, about 3 minutes left. So one thing we always want to do on the show is to give people a way to find you, to find your book or to connect with you in any channel that you wish, email, websites, any kind of information that you'd like to give for people that might want to follow up after the show and find your book or connect with you. Whatever, you just go ahead and share whichever means you'd like on that.
Okay, well, I think my book is on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, and let's see, my card should have my website on it. I'm not where it is right now.
And the book is Silence Isn't Always Golden.
Silence Isn't Golden. Silence isn't
Sorry.
Golden.
Isn't
and,
golden. Silence isn't golden. By Mary Louise Shelton.
Right, right. And I'm not sure what the website is. I'd have to get one of my cards. You don't have it, Holly?
I'm a looking right now.
Okay.
You do have it, Author Central.
Mm-hmm.
And on Amazon,
yeah.
Amazon,
that tells
mm-hmm.
a little about your story here.
Yep.
Let me go on Alignable, see if you put it on there. I actually met Mary on Alignable.
Right, right. Yes, we met on
yes.
Alignable. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We met on Alignable. I'm trying
yep.
to.
Yep.
Yeah, look up Mary Louise Shelton on Amazon, and you will find her page there easily.
Yes,
yeah.
you will. We'll see here.
That's,
and she is on Alignable, Mary Shelton on Alignable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Alignable. Do
yeah,
you have a LinkedIn?
I do have a LinkedIn, but the book is not there. I believe the website
okay.
for the book is authormaryshelton@gmail.com, but I'm not sure. Let me go.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking here on your Alignable site, but I don't see the website. It's curious. People will have to do a little search. Well, Amazon's easy. Everybody goes to Amazon.
Right.
So that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you are on Alignable. You are on LinkedIn too. I'll have to link up to you there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
Author Mary Shelton at gmail.com. And Facebook is at Facebook is at God is I Am.
God is I Am. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
At Facebook. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Great.
God is I Am. Yeah. That's
well,
it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing a story that's not easy to share or talk about. I know it isn't. And you know, I'm sure that, you know, it definitely takes you into some territory in memory. But thank you very much for sharing with us and joining us tonight. And I will give you the last word, and then Holly, you can take us out for tonight.
Yes, and we will definitely keep in touch.
Oh, no, thank you guys very, very much. I'm telling you, this has been such a blessing. This is such a blessing to be my first podcast. Thank you guys. I tell you, this has been really a blessing for me.
We're honored, and God bless. We're very honored.
Yes, well, God bless you both. Sure. You have a great, great evening. Thank you for having
bless
me.
Bless you, honey.
You're welcome.
Bless you.
And we'll be in touch.
All right.
I definitely will be in touch about our convention because if there's any possible way you could make it to Louisville next July, that would be awesome. But I will share with you on Alignable all that info. But love to have you join us. And I just wanted to let everybody know to check if you haven't caught the whole episode tonight, please go back, listen to the playback. Great show, fascinating guest. Mary has a very incredible story, how she's rose above and used writing as an outlet, also therapeutic outlet. But I want to let you all know to check us out next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time for another great show. And you all have a great rest of your week, and we will see you then. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.